most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolli right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolli.
And you are listening to State of the Arts.
On LA Talk Radio. Always a pleasure to be with you. We would like to thank our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services, for supporting us this year. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
That would be right, sir. And our thanks also go out to PerformingArtsLive.com for their support of our live arts calendar. Performing Arts Live is the most comprehensive online directory of event information for music, theater, and dance events in Southern California.
Now, we have three guests today, potentially three. We're waiting on a phone call from two of our guests who are, they're in a dance studio in Florida.
That's what I understand, yeah.
And our first two guests today are best known for their brilliant moves on the dance floor on ABC's smash hit Dancing with the Stars. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. We're going to let you know how you can see them live in a limited engagement here in Los Angeles. Jonathan Roberts and Anna Trebunskaya. I hope I got that right. Forgive me, Anna, if you're listening or dialing out and I pronounced your name wrong. Anna Trebunskaya will join us momentarily if there's not a phone issue. And if they call, maybe a little fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants type of show. We may bounce back and forth.
Yeah, we always fly by the seat of our pants.
Well, speak for yourself.
Sometimes on Mondays, we don't even wear pants.
Right? Well, no, that's right. Yeah. It's No Pants Monday.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Go ahead.
There you go. And
right.
With us in studio today, Paul, a member of the original Broadway cast of the six-time Tony Award-winning musical, The Light of the Piazza. Recipient of the prestigious Helen Hayes Award for Best Actor and far too many credits to list in this initial pre-intro, David Burnham is here with us today.
Welcome, David. Welcome,
hello,
David.
Guys. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you here.
You want to hear how good it is? That's how good it is to have you here.
Oh, I like it. I like it. I like it. It's nice to have that
on the lobby.
Yeah.
Carry you around with you. So we look forward to talking to you, David. We might be talking to you sooner rather than later. I do have to say, though, we're looking at your promotional material when we're preparing for the show, and I was just curious if your resume is available in a leather-bound volume.
Yes. It's actually being printed up and going to be bound very soon and available at a local bookstore.
It is lengthy. Lengthy and impressive.
You just try
impressive.
To keep busy.
Yeah, no, that's it.
He's one of the busiest guys in the Broadway show business.
Yeah, I know, and the credits are significant.
Huge.
It's not like, the chuckle pouch and, Possum Hunt, Alabama. These are
the real deal.
Yeah, exactly.
And the voice, of course, which we're going to have a little clip we're going to be playing of David singing, ladies and gentlemen. So stick around.
Oh, that's
for
right.
That.
We do have a clip here. Flight, I believe.
It is beautiful. Off of his new CD or his last current CD, I should say.
Yeah, the self-titled David Burnham.
That's correct. And it is being followed up by another CD, which is in the process of being pressed now and will be coming out
in March.
Yeah. Wow, right around the corner.
Just out of curiosity, David, why did you use my photo on the cover? Why did you
we get confused all the time.
Yeah, I know.
So I was just like, I wanted to keep
Jeez.
It.
Jeez. Well, it's a good shot of me. I'm glad you used it. Yeah.
So how was your week?
My week was good. It's been very busy. I'm doing a lot of things, and I went to. Tell me about yours first. Tell me what you have.
Well, as you know, at Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's, my supper club, we have every year we do.
Now, what is that now? The Sterling's what?
Supper club.
Oh, okay.
Supper club.
Okay.
It's the most critically acclaimed club in Los Angeles, for dedicated to the best of Broadway stars like David and great American songbook nightclub stars, etc. Anyhow, David, every year we do something that has become terribly important in Los Angeles called LA's Next Great Stage Star. It's a competition. Very American Idol-like, but specific to the musical theater stage. So all of our colleagues, Michael Donovan and Victoria Morris, and all of these wonderful, who I think is your agent.
Victoria is my agent.
All come and support this competition and judge in panels, and then the big finale is coming up this week, coming up Sunday. So I was very, I produce it and I host it, and I have an associate producer, Tony Mansour, who does a lot of wonderful work on it, and boy, it was an exciting, coming into the fifth of 6 weeks. Very exciting. Yep. And you know, that's how we spent spend every weekend here recently.
Yeah.
But it's exciting because, you know, big awards coming up for the
weekend.
That's
awards season.
Yeah.
And you're like sold out until the finale, aren't you?
We were sold out before we opened for 6 weeks.
Right. And yeah. Maxine Lapidus, who we had on the show last week, who you said she performed last night.
She was our evening headliner last night.
Well, your ass must be dragging on Mondays after your Sunday.
Tell me about it.
You're just on your feet because you host both of those.
I do.
Yeah.
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 So it's
do what I do.
What's
do
that?
What I do.
Yeah,
crack. Crack's the big mover for me. I tell you, I'm leaving here. I'm building an addition.
And liquid crack at that, right?
Yeah, green tea. Walking around with green tea just makes us look like, you know, reptiles. Like here's my glass of plankton.
You know? Here's the thing though, Paul. You know, LA's Next Great Stage Star, the finale comes up next Sunday, and I understand there's some sort of an event.
A sporting event?
A sporting event.
Yeah, the Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl.
Yes.
The Super Bowl.
Yes.
When did this happen? No, seriously, when did it happen? A bowling event?
Michael, if you're serious, you have just made me very happy to find out that there's a person who knows less about football than me.
Oh, football?
Yes.
You mean it's football?
Yes, it's football. Yes.
We're not talking bowling.
Wow. No. The Super Bowl, yes. But to give you an idea of my naivete about the whole thing, I don't even know who's playing.
It's the Steelers and the Packers.
I know it's the Packers because my wife's from Chicago, so I did follow that competition, but I didn't know it was Pittsburgh.
But you are a bowler, as I recall, right?
I am I'm a bowler when I need to be. Bowling is a humiliating process for me, and let me explain why. Last night I bowled, actually. I'm doing a show at the Edgemar Arts Center in Santa Monica, a great group there that's putting together a production of A Flea in Her Ear. I don't know if you know the show, David, but it's a very funny classic French farce, and it's the farce on which all farces are based. I got that all out without an obscenity. Did you catch that?
Carol Channing's old routine with yeses, Sally, whatever it was, yeah.
But, the farce on which all farces are based. And so we had a little fundraiser last night at Mar Vista Lanes. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, just not to go into it too much because it's hardly that interesting, but here's why bowling is embarrassing for me. Because my feet are so big that when... In my hometown, take a look.
David Burnham has just looked under the desk.
We're going to move this microphone.
And he speaks the truth.
Yeah.
They are boats.
Yes. He's basically leather-covered toboggans at the bottoms of his legs. And my brother and I could not bowl at the same bowling alley in Connecticut in our hometown because there was only one pair of size 13 shoes there. So that already you feel like, you know, the John Merrick of the bowling alley. And so I figured, okay, I'm older now. I'm actually older. My feet are actually bigger. I wear a size 14 now instead of a 13. And on top of that, my feet are so incredibly narrow that it looks like they melted.
Wow.
You know, my feet are really, you know. So I figured, no big deal. I'll get the bowling shoes, da-da-da-da-da, and I go up, and I'm prouder about it now. It's just like a size 14, please. First of all, they go over to this cubbyhole that they're like they have coffee cups in because it's not a frequently used cubbyhole. I wouldn't have been surprised if bats flew out of it when they pulled these shoes out. Now, I suppose I should have been elated that they actually had size 14 shoes there, but was it so much to ask that they be matching? I mean,
they weren't matching,
Michael.
So one was like purple and white, and one was
they were different colors. So already feel like I might as well be juggling because I'm the clown on lane two, and now because they're to call more attention to these gunboat feet, let's put him in two different shoes. So that is why. So when you say I'm a bowler, yes, I've bowled twice in the past decade, and that is the reason, my friend. That is the reason.
That is a sad and sorry story.
But maybe you can start a fashion trend. You know,
I could.
Wearing
I
two
could.
Different shoes.
Clowns that dress in dark closets. That will be the name of the fashion movement.
Are you a good bowler?
No.
David?
I'm a pretty good bowler.
Are you?
Yeah.
What do you throw?
The ball.
Well, yeah. What are you? I thought I was being hit by you.
Yeah, I was going to say the guy who doesn't know what the Super Bowl is. What do you throw, pal?
You know, it depends.
What
on the
What do you throw?
Say what?
It depends on the night, and it depends on my shoes, of course.
It depends.
If they match, I bowl much better.
It also depends on alcohol consumption.
That is
noticing
true.
David's foot size here is what I'd say like a normal 9.5, 10?
Nine.
Okay.
A flat nine.
Nine.
Let me tell you an interesting story about bowling, since we have the time to talk about bowling before we get to David. There, Mary Lou Retton was an Olympic gymnast.
Yes. Not to be confused with Mary Lou Henner.
Once again, showing my knowledge of the sporting world. But Mary Lou, this was an article that Mike Royko wrote for the Chicago Tribune, wrote about 15, 20 years ago now. But Mary Lou Retton was hired by the American Bowling Federation to be their spokesperson. And apparently, after she signed up to be, because apparently her she was a big bowler, in addition to being a wonderful gymnast. And apparently, and I don't know how much of this I have right, so Miss Retton, forgive me if I have this wrong, but she put on a little weight, and they dropped her. The American Bowling Federation dropped her as a spokesperson for bowling because she put on a little too much weight. So Mike Royko from Chicago Tribune wrote this phenomenal article about, let's talk about the sport of bowling for a minute, shall we? Let's talk about a sport that is the only one that provides you with an ashtray.
Exactly.
And a button that if you push it, a woman will bring you beer. So before you get all highfalutin about being maybe a little too chunky to bowl, look at your fan base, would you please?
Exactly.
So that is
exactly.
My Do you ever read any of the Royko articles from Chicago?
No, but it sounds fascinating.
Great writer.
The story, and
great
I like, writer. You know, she's a lovely lady, Mary Lou.
Do you know her?
Yeah.
Would you apologize to her for me?
I will.
For just talking about her weight gain on the air?
Yeah, no, I'm sure she wouldn't be offended. No, people have said other things, too, you know. It's true. But, you know, it's like the Lainey Kazan situation. You know that Lainey Kazan...
She bowls?
No, probably. If not, she should. But she was the original Gettle Moskowitz in Seesaw. Oh. Did you know that?
I did not know
that.
Yeah,
on its way to Broadway. Mm. And I happened to be in Detroit, I believe it was, or some place on the East Coast with a client. We were touring in a show. And she was in Seesaw, and she did a phenomenal job, you know, with those pipes, of course. But part of her contract was that she was to lose weight. This is why I bring this up. And if she did not before the show got to New York, then her contract was being violated. So,
really?
And the night that I saw her was the night that the producers let her go because she did not meet that criteria, and she was replaced by Michelle Lee, who created the role then on Broadway and went on to win, I think, the Tony Award, perhaps, for her performance nomination.
Yeah.
But and really kind of launched her Broadway career in a bigger and better way.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Image.
You know, it's just such a shame that so much hinges on that. I mean, love the example of, you know, what we talked about before, Mary Lou Retton. I mean, this is an athlete that has accomplished what, you know, a fragment of 1% of the population will ever accomplish. And just like, oh, no, sorry. Just all appearances. Just doesn't matter what you did. The appearances. How you look on our TV commercial.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I love Lainey Kazan, too.
Yeah, and Lainey's fantastic. But back to Mary Lou. Doesn't she have some sort of huge gift where a memory thing that she can remember
That's Mary Lou Henner. That's Mary Lou Henner.
No. It's Mary Lou Retton.
No.
It's Mary Lou Henner.
It's Mary Lou Henner, actually. Yeah, there was a thing on CBS News about it, and it is Mary Lou Henner from Taxi. Yeah. She's the one who has this gift. Did you see this thing?
I heard about that, actually. I did hear about that.
She has this thing where she remembers days, like, visually. Like, you could say, you know, December 18th, 1982. And she goes, oh, okay, I had meatloaf. And I wore a corduroy skirt, and she will, I mean...
Well, how would you be able to dispute it anyway, you know?
I have problems remembering what I ate for lunch.
Right, exactly.
That's a good point. Maybe they're making all the shit up.
Yeah, maybe it's a little PR.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be obscene on the air.
Were you?
I just said shit.
Oh, the S word, Paul.
Yes.
Jesus. Oh, excuse me. I'm so sorry. That was the J word.
There's no FCC, because it's internet radio. We could say whatever
but
we want.
But we're very respectful.
We are very respectful, especially when we have an elegant guest.
An elegant man. And
who we indeed. Should get to, by
yes,
the way.
We should.
Yes, we should. So, Michael, do you want... Let me see if I have the introduction here, because we're going to skip order here.
We are.
And I will. Our next guest, our first guest, just returned from New York, where he played Fiero in the Broadway production of Wicked, having created the role in the original Los Angeles Workshop production. In addition... What's that?
I just said, wow.
Yeah. It is impressive.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so I can just continue reading this while you contain your enthusiasm?
Just had to say that.
Okay. Wow.
Okay.
Sorry. I have to start again now. My feet, my giant feet are sweating. In addition to his role in the original cast of the six-time Tony Award-winning Light in the Piazza, he's performed on PBS's Live from Lincoln Center and the Tony Awards broadcast, and we have a little sample of his vocal stylings we're going to play right now. This is David Burnham singing Flight. He's just released his debut self-titled CD, David Burnham. Please welcome, you guessed it, David Burnham is here with us today. I'm going to give you applause again, David. This is how beautiful that song was.
Oh, nice. Nice.
It was beautiful.
Just about one of the most perfect voices, right?
He doesn't suck, I'll tell you. He doesn't suck. There's
yeah, you know, man. I like to, I say that all the time. Yes, you know.
Well, not only a great voice, he's a good-looking man, and on top of it, he has all these an amazing credits, an amazing career. And
can I come here every day?
Yes. Oh, yes, sir. Yes,
that?
Sir. You may, sir. Yes. We are thrilled to have you, and ladies and gentlemen, you know, David appears all over the country, but he happens to be appearing in Los Angeles coming up this week on February 2nd, on Wednesday, February 2nd, in a very, very special evening at the Gardenia, which is one of the great clubs in Los Angeles. It's been around for probably 40 years in Hollywood, and it is Critcherland at the Gardenia. Critcherland is a wonderful record company that was founded by Bruce Kimmel, one of our great directors in town and great record producers, and for this kind of wonderful music that David sings, and musical theater and Great American Songbook. And it's Wednesday, February 2nd from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. And David is headlining this event along with Juliana Hansen, who was Millie in the first U.S. national tour of Thoroughly Modern Millie, Ben Platt, and also Kelly Sullivan, who appeared on Broadway in Young Frankenstein, and Taylor, Adelaide in Cabrillo Music Theater, our friend Cabrillo out there, and their production of Guys and Dolls. And Melody Hollis, I understand, is joining you as well, David, and she was, of course, on Broadway in White Christmas. And your very special guest at the event is Mr. Richard Sherman and our good friend Jerry Sternbach, his musical director. What kind of an evening is this going to be, man?
Oh, I think it's going to be a great evening.
Sounds fantastic.
The music of the Sherman Brothers. You remember them? Mary Poppins and all those great Disney films from the 60s and 70s.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Sure.
The Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Winnie the Pooh.
They wrote It's a Small World.
Yes.
Yeah, Disneyland.
So will they be publicly stoned for that one?
Yeah, I get to sing some really cool music that actually is some of their lesser known music.
Oh, what are you doing?
I'm doing a couple of songs from Busker Alley, which is a musical that they wrote back in, I think it was the 80s, I think, or maybe the early 90s, and it starred Tommy Toon.
Don't say the 80s like it was so long ago. For those of us that graduated high school in 1982, it was the 80s.
It was way back in the 80s.
They didn't have electric lights. Was Tommy Toon?
Yeah, Tommy Toon musical, okay. A vehicle for him. And I guess it went out of town, and it toured, did its pre-Broadway run, but it never actually made it to Broadway. But there's a lot of great music in it, and I get to sing two really cool songs from there, and a song from the Tigger movie, which is fun. Kenny Loggins co-wrote it with them.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of a cool pop tune. I didn't know that the Sherman Brothers could write pop music, but it's an actual really nice little pop tune.
That sounds like a cool opportunity, though, to see to hear music from these people that we know for, obviously, the famous ones that we mentioned, Charlotte's Web, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, but to have an opportunity to hear things, some of the lesser-known stuff.
Yeah, and Bruce, he'll talk about it, too, during the evening, so he gives you kind of a rundown of where they're from, what the songs are about, so it's kind of informative, an informative night as well.
Now, I want to also address on this that while reservations are not necessary for this, they are highly recommended because apparently they did a show last month. And
it's
it was
a series that Bruce is doing. Yeah,
first Wednesday of each month.
Yes. Okay. Right.
All right.
And it's very popular. It's taken on a whole life of its own. So.
Well,
yeah,
we'll definitely give the phone number we have here for reservations, 323-467-7444. David, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to make sure that we get that phone number out there, 323-467-7444.
Absolutely.
So is it all individual soloists? Are there any duets?
There's actually some duets and solos, and I'm actually doing one called Are We Dancing from The Happiest Millionaire.
Oh, I like that movie.
You remember that movie?
Of course.
John Davidson originally sang it. And
Leslie. Anne Warren was in that film.
Was she in that?
Yes, she was.
Ah.
Yeah.
So
sweet
I'm going to sing the duet with Kim Huber, actually.
I love Kim Huber.
She's joining the cast as well.
So. Kim Huber.
Oh.
Belle on Broadway at one point and in The Marvelous Wonderettes, Paul.
Oh, really?
Very talented.
Amazing.
In New York or here in town?
Belle on Broadway in The Marvelous Wanderettes here.
Oh, the El Portal production.
Yeah. I think she might be doing it out at Cabrillo, isn't it? At Cabrillo Music Theater
right now? I think it is.
Yeah. It's such a family, these performers, because I always hear the names. Everyone is, you know, if they're out here, they've performed at like four or five different venues, and then they all, you know, so many of them have performed on Broadway, and, you know, it really is a very, very tight circle of performers.
And it gets smaller and smaller the longer you're in it.
Well, is that good or bad?
It depends.
Well, it's good if you survive it.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
Like David.
That's right.
And I'm going to be there on at your event.
Oh, terrific.
Actually. Yeah, I'm coming in to see it and hear you sing and all these other wonderful people, because I said to Bruce, I love the fact that you are doing this and keeping this all alive and out there. So,
yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's going to be a great night.
Absolutely. But talking about great Broadway stars, and one of them, of course, we are talking to now, David Burnham, is in studio with us, ladies and gentlemen. And David, tell us about the beginning of your career on Broadway.
Beginning of my Broadway career. Well, you know, we all get started in different ways, and my start in the biz, I guess my big break, I guess you would call it, came a few years back when I didn't have an agent at the time, and I couldn't get appointments for an audition, so I just went to the open call. And if you know what an open call
yes,
is,
of course,
you know,
yeah.
the casting call where yeah. there's like hundreds and hundreds of people line up and try to get seen. But I was going to this open call for Ragtime. Do you guys remember that show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful
yeah.
show, gorgeous show.
Yeah.
And at the time, I had long hair about down to my chest here, and I was doing a production of Joseph, like a community theater production of Joseph. I was very young and was playing Joseph at the time, so I looked very tanned and very like long hair and was wearing ripped jeans. And
very biblical.
Very biblical. Yeah. I think I even wore flip-flops to the audition. I don't know what I was thinking. But
cool.
I walked. Yeah, yeah, it was really cool. I walked into this audition for Ragtime, and I sang my song and really gave it to them, and they looked at me and they said, David, you are not right for this show at all, but you're perfect for something else we're casting. And they asked if I could come back that night to the callbacks for Ragtime and sing for another show. And I said, of course, of course. And they said, do you happen to know the music from Joseph? And
now,
I said,
was that in New York or here?
It was actually out here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting.
You're doing a production of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and they ask you if you can come back if you're familiar. And, of course, you had to say, no, not at all, but I'll learn it this afternoon.
Exactly. I'm going to look at that in the next few hours and come back and sing it for you. So I came back that night and sang for all the people who wrote Ragtime, Terrence McNally, Stephen Flaherty, Lynn Ahrens, and Garth Drabinski, who was the head of Live Ent. Do you remember Live
Ent? Yeah.
They produced Sunset Boulevard and Ragtime and all these huge things up in Canada. Well, I sang Close Every Door, the big 11 o'clock number from Joseph.
Yeah.
And Garth Drabinski, looking very much like Louis B. Mayer, sitting in his throne at this big long table with like 15 people, looks at me and says, hey, kid, can you fly to Canada tomorrow? We'd like to have you sing for the director of the national tour of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And I said, well, let me check my schedule.
Yes.
So I got on a plane the next day and got off and sang my song for the director. And they said, David, we are looking to replace an actor who has been doing the show for about 6 years. And that actor is Donny Osmond. And we think you're a perfect fit. So we'd like to make you a star here in Canada, kid.
Wow.
And within a half an hour, I was spinning around in that coat doing a publicity shoot. Literally, taking photos and in costume within a half hour of my audition in Canada.
Wow.
So it was an amazing experience, and I did that show for a year on tour, and Donny Osmond actually put me into the show, taught me the role, and it was a great.
What a nice experience, and by such a nice man, Donny Osmond and his family are some of the nicest people on earth.
Michael has a great history with the Osmonds.
I do. I used to represent them when they were the Osmond, well, Donny and Marie and the Osmond brothers, and so we did a world tour and have kept in touch. Michael represented them
until there was a horrible incident, and Donny Osmond talks about it in his autobiography. Apparently, he was replaced in Joseph, and they basically take the other
chain. Oh, that. Yeah,
yeah,
we had to bring
destroyed
that up
him emotionally.
Yeah, it was, yeah. After 6 years, he thought he had the gig for life.
But yeah, not so. He's locked into it.
Not so much.
He's up there with his walker. Close every door to me.
He did a fine job in that show, and I know David did because I've read the reviews and seen the photographs and seen some clips.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And Donny truly is a nice man.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Exactly.
They don't get nicer than Donny and Marie. Come on, let's face it. Really, right?
Yeah, really. And genuinely so.
Genuinely so.
Yeah.
The I love Joseph, and if I remember correctly, and I'm not as versed in musical theater as the two of you, but it's the first Rice and Weber, right? It was the first one they wrote together. They wrote it like as a project for their boys' school or something. They wrote it very young.
Mm-hmm. They were I think they were teenagers when they wrote it.
And they wrote like a 30-minute show or something, and then it came. I think they came back to it after the success of Superstar when they saw that Superstar. You know, that things with biblical themes could play so well that they went back and they said, you know what, let's flesh out Joseph. Is that correct?
I think that is correct, right?
And the two original producers who were women, two women as I recall, right? I think they were.
I don't know.
Out of New York. I know they were in New York in the Broadway production. They had, but prior to it getting to Broadway, it had been at the Ford Theater in Washington, D.C., and that's where it kind of launched itself for the broad, but as it was heading to Broadway, it worked itself out there.
Okay.
One of my clients, Andy Gibb, I don't know whether you're too young to remember
Andy.
No,
I remember Andy Gibb, yeah.
Andy went in to replace Bill.
Bill Hutton.
Bill Hutton in the show, and Andy was the first celebrity to go into the role of Joseph on Broadway, so it was a big to deal.
Oh, he was pre-Donnie. He was pre-Donnie
Osmond? Oh, yeah. No, this was the Broadway production, and David did the U.S. National Tour as was Donnie was doing it. Did he do it on Broadway as well?
No.
But at any rate, Andy did very, very well in that, and Bill was, like Donnie, was very, very kind in putting him in the show and with us, and it was quite a departure.
It's a short show. It's a short show. Yeah. It's not long. I know that when we did it, they added like a 20-minute mega mix at the end to kind of lengthen the show.
Which is now kind of a standard part of it now.
It is kind of standard, yeah. So it's a full-length show now, two acts, because it was originally pretty short.
I was lucky enough to see so many things growing, like I said, graduating high school in 1982, in the 80s, late 70s and early 80s, because I lived in Connecticut. I was 60 miles from Manhattan. And the shows that I got to see the original cast with Joseph, with Bill Hutton and Laurie Beachman.
Yes.
I got to see the original Evita with Patti LuPone and Mandy Patinkin and Bob Gunton. And I saw the original Amadeus with Ian McKellen and Tim Curry and Jane Seymour. Mm-hmm. Jane Seymour, who's actually doing the Dancing with the Stars thing that we're going to talk about.
The Ballroom with a Twist.
Ballroom
with a Twist.
And you were all 5 years old when
exactly.
You saw this.
They brought me in swaddling clothes, and they would bring me up there, and I barely remember. Because I was two.
Yeah.
But I took it in. I felt I took the music in.
That's when it all started.
We should pay the bills with our arts calendar before we come back.
And then we're
going to
come back to David.
David, Michael, do you want to kick off our live arts calendar for
us? I will indeed, Paul. It's a rare combination of unprecedented originality and blinding talent. The Drowsy Chaperone boldly addresses a great unspoken desire in all of our hearts to be entertained. If you've ever sat in a dark theater and thought, "Dear Lord in heaven, please let it be good," this is the show for you. It all begins when a diehard musical theater fan plays his favorite cast album on his turntable, and the musical literally bursts to life in his living room, telling the rambunctious tale of a Broadway starlet trying to find and keep her true love. Now playing at the Plummer Auditorium in Fullerton, California.
No dogs will be allowed at this show, and for good reason. Another Tony Award winner for Best Musical, this song and dance spectacular is also one of the longest-running musicals in Broadway history. Enchanting music, including the immortal Memory, and fantastic dancing make this a perfect show for lovers of man's second best friend. Perfect for the entire family. Cats is playing at the Richard and Karen Carpenter Performing Arts Center in Long Beach through February 27th. And I just want to say, Michael, I was actually in a production of Cats when I was younger.
No way.
But in my production, we spelled it K-A-T-Z. And it was a musical about a crazed nomadic accountant.
Right.
It's a difficult thing.
At which synagogue was that presented?
What's that?
At a synagogue was that presented?
Yes.
I thought so. For more information, ladies and gentlemen, about the arts in Los Angeles and throughout Southern California, please visit performingartslive.com. And as always, stateoftheartsla.com.
And also, if you have anything you want to know about or something you want us to talk about on the show or you're interested in being on the show, if you have a production going up in the Southern California area, be sure to send us an email at stateoftheartsla@gmail.com. That's stateoftheartsla@gmail.com. David, I want to get back to you,
yes,
obviously, and wanted to find out about, now, you said before we started the show that you're working on a second CD after just releasing this one, but I'm interested in your journey for the first one. I'm always intrigued by this, how an artist decides on what they're going to use to represent themselves. Are there any original songs on it? Is it all covers? I mean, I'm not familiar with the CD, so tell us about
this first CD, which came out, actually, it's actually been out a couple years now.
Oh, it has?
Yeah, actually.
Okay.
It came out when I was doing The Light in the Piazza on Broadway at Lincoln Center. It was announced that I would be doing the role on tour, traveling the country. I did it for a year and a half on tour. And actually, someone approached me when I was doing Piazza on Broadway and had just heard that I was going out. And they said, basically, we hear you're going to go do lots of shows all over the country, and we'd like you to do a CD because I think you could sell them on tour. And so I'm willing to put up the money, he said, as long as he could have say over what I sang.
Okay.
So I was like, yeah, sure. I'll sing whatever you'd like if we can make a CD.
And covered your production costs for generating.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it was a great deal. And so what I did is I made lists of songs that I felt connection to. And he had some songs that he wanted me to look at. And we kind of came together. And it's an eclectic mix of songs, actually. But his idea was that he wanted to make it appeal to the broadest audience he could.
Sure.
So there's some standards on that first CD, like Moon River and Smile, written by Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
You know, some old-time stuff. And then there's some new stuff, like Flight, which you just heard, written by Craig Cornelia.
Beautiful.
That's on the CD?
That's on the first CD. And there's a song from Wicked, a duet that I do with Eden Espinosa, because included on that CD is stuff from the shows that I've done. There's a song from Light in the Piazza, there's a song from Wicked, a song from Joseph, Close Every Door. So it kind of is a wide range of music, but I think it appeals to a lot of people. And he was right, because we did sell a lot on tour, and a lot of different people bought them, from older women, you know, relating to the standards, and the new young kids wanting to hear the Wicked song.
So by older women, you mean there were songs from all the way back in the 80s?
Yeah, all the way back.
And was that Lee Lessac you were referring to?
Yeah, Lee Lessac, LML Music, produced
LML
that.
LML Music, yeah. He's done many, many wonderful things for many artists.
Yeah, and Paul Lambert was the investor who actually approached me, so... And then Lee produced.
Fantastic.
That's some great foresight, though. So the CD is available on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
It is self-titled, David Burnham. That's B-U-R-N-H-A-M.
That's
correct.
It.
I'm going off memory. And
it's also on iTunes.
Barnes & Noble bookstores and other fine retailers. And, of course, visit David's website.
And which is David, BURNHAM.com.
Would be right.
Yeah.
So now let's go back to Broadway, though.
Sure.
Let's go back to Broadway and...
Well, let's finish the show first.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. But and this has been a fast show here.
Huh?
It's been a fast show. I mean,
Pantsless Monday is always a quick mover. And I also talk for 20 minutes about my giant feet, so that eats it.
There you go. He's done so many other things in the theater as well, which a new musical called Letters from Nam. I'm reading here.
Opposite. Yeah, with Maureen McGovern.
Yes.
That was so much fun.
We love her.
Paris Barkley wrote that based on the book Dear America, Letters from Nam,
mm-hmm.
Which was a really interesting project. We did it at the Kennedy Center and did it
in
Washington State up in Seattle. And it's had a few incarnations. And what a thrill that was to be a part of that.
I bet. And how was it to work with Ted Neely doing Jesus Christ Superstar on tour?
Pretty much like working with the real Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Ted Neely.
He's amazing.
Working with the man. He's still doing that.
Yeah.
Yes,
he's like the Yul Brynner of that show.
But
right?
he's
the
sort Yul of become Brenner. Like this sort of preacher because of it. I mean, he's actually an ordained minister now.
Is he? I didn't know about that.
CBS News Sunday Morning did a piece on him, yeah.
He truly is a great man, though. He's such a nice, gentle person. And
you played Peter in that production.
I did. I played Peter opposite his Jesus. And,
yes.
And Carl Anderson actually came in and was Judas for some of that tour.
Wow.
And it was an amazing show to be a part of, just because, you know, knowing the history that he's had with the show. And
wow.
Those fans are crazy, though. Let me tell you, there are some serious
Jesus Christ Superstar fans.
Man, I think they really think he is Jesus.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
They would have him sign their Bibles. And, I mean, it was like, Ted, can you sign my Bible? Yeah, okay.
Well, see, that's the trade-off. The trade-off is, Ted, we got good news and bad news. The good news is we're sold out. The bad news is the lobby's full of lepers. Oh, what are you going to be offended at a leprosy joke?
No.
We're not going to offend
anyone. I didn't say that.
You rolled your eyes. Paul's doing it again. I roll.
The L word.
Leprosy.
Hey, what? David. One of the great shows. One of the great shows, which I discovered that my partner here, Paul Sterling, has not ever seen, and that is Wicked. And you starred on Broadway in that production,
did,
and playing the love interest in that show of Fierro.
It was an exciting
Tell
experience.
Tell us about it, with Eden Espinosa.
And I had a number of different Elphabas, Stephanie Block, and it was a great time. I actually originated the role of Fierro in all the workshops.
This is what we were told. I mean, what was that experience like, originating the role and then... You didn't play it.
I actually got sidelined, went and did Light in the Piazza on Broadway instead, but then I got to come back and do the role again on Broadway, which it was nice to complete that circle. But it was an amazing experience. I mean, I was the first person to sing those songs, and the very first time we read through the play, they only had the first act done. And, you know, to give the listeners out there an idea of, you know, it is no easy task to write a musical. The very first time we read it, it ran over 3 hours, just the first act. So that's where the expertise goes into what do you cut, what do you add, how do you hone this down into a cohesive show. And I think Stephen Schwartz and Winnie Holtzman did a great job. And,
did you have any idea, though, going through that process, that it was going to head into what it's become today?
You know, we all had an idea. The first time we sat down around the piano and Stephen played those first chords of that, you know, that opening, dun, 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 dun. It was so exciting. And then we heard the song For Good, you know, the duet that they sing, which has now become a standard in the Broadway world. We were like, this is very special. If they can get this right, it's going to be huge. And they did.
They did. Because the book was so, the actual, you know, book, the story that came out before the musical was ever written was so extraordinary as well. Did you ever read the book?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, what a very special treat that was to read that book and then have it. I remember sitting in the theater here when it opened, and when that, just as you said, just when the first notes of the orchestra start to play, it is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And it just takes you on a ride that keeps going and going and going.
Now, David,
so extraordinary.
In doing the original, though, in the workshop productions, and obviously it was the great definition of a success, is there anything that hit the cutting room floor from that original process that you're sorry that did? Is there anything that you could share that was taken out that... When they found the angel in the marble, as they say, is there any marble that you would have liked to have seen left behind?
Well, it was an interesting process, because when we first started it, Stephen's score was actually much darker than it actually ended up turning out. He was inspired by Carmina Burana, if you will. Mm. The overture was like that dark, and the book is a lot darker and very political, so I think they were going more with that source material, and the more workshops we did, the lighter it got, and the more focused it got on the two girls.
Okay.
So the periphery characters kind of got smaller and smaller and smaller. So, like, my role, for instance, got a lot smaller, which is actually correct. It should be that way.
For the purposes of the play,
yes. And you need to focus on those two girls. So, you know, there was some music that I got to sing that I missed.
Right.
There was a couple duets and things that were really kind of cool and fun. And you get attached to them when you're doing them in a workshop. And you're like, wow, I really missed that. Or they change it. But in the long run, I think it was right. All their decisions proved to be correct, I think, because they just honed it into this, you know, streamlined, beautiful show.
Because I'm really surprised no one has done that, because they do it with DVDs all the time. It's like, here's the deleted scenes, here's the extras.
Oh, I'm sure it's coming.
That's what you said. I would love to see an album or something. It's like, you know, here are the songs that fell behind the stove while cooking.
Right.
You know,
these
are the ones that...
One of the songs is resurfaced. It's called Making Good, and it was in the spot that The Wizard and I is in.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephanie Block does it on her album. She was the original Elphaba in the workshops
with me
before Adina joined the cast.
And she's amazing.
Oh,
too,
amazing.
Stephanie.
Yeah, and we actually got to do it on Broadway together.
Yeah, what a treat that must have been.
Yeah, it was nice to be reunited that way.
David and I, Paul, met backstage at the Amundsen Theater here in Los Angeles when he was touring in Light of the Piazza with Christine Andreas, who was a dear friend of mine who was starring in the production. And that was the first time that we had the pleasure of saying hello. And that in itself, what a show.
Lighten the Piazza.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, when you were saying that, you know, I wasn't doing, you know, Wicked because I was doing Lighten the Piazza at Lincoln Center, it's like, well, yeah, that's a nice problem to have.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Very rarely in your life does a role come along that I think you, when you're doing it, you go, this is the role, this one fits me like a glove, and it shows everything that you can do. And for me, that was Lighten the Piazza. It was just so beautifully written. The music was extraordinary. Adam Gettle, who is actually Richard Rodgers' grandson, wrote score, won the Tony Award in 2006 for best score.
And you won the Helen Hayes Award, didn't you?
I did. I won the Helen Hayes and won the Garland Award out here for best actor, which was nice. And that show, I did it for 2.5 years on Broadway and on tour and never got tired of it because it was always new things to be
revealed. I can imagine. My experience in seeing the show was like I was like, it was such a beautiful show that it was like watching, I kind of peeking in on the lives of these people. It was almost, you know, it's different.
It's a very different type show. Yeah. It's not an in-your-face show.
Exactly.
It makes you sit
forward and listen. It's like looking through a window and learning about the lives of these people. And it was extraordinary.
It requires you to sit forward on your seat and kind of pay attention. And if you're willing to go on the ride, the reward is great. For some people, it was a little too avant-garde and sophisticated for them, but for other people, it was their favorite musical.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That was my experience with a play at the Amundsen called Black Rider, the Robert Wilson piece. Tom Waits did the music. And you talk about polarizing.
Yeah.
You know, half the audience, I mean, a good chunk of the audience left at intermission, and those that stayed through the second act are standing up and cheering at the end of it. So, but good, you know, good music and good theater is like that. If you got to take a risk.
Yeah.
You know.
And Craig Lucas wrote the book, and it was a beautiful book.
Wow.
Which is rare in musicals to have a nice.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't. Yeah. It's the last thing considered. You know. Yeah.
Well, I have a lovely keepsake from that show, and then we need to move on a little bit here, but. When Christine Andreas goes to the wall there.
Yeah,
and
does the rubbing.
And she does the rubbing of a piece of paper. She puts a piece, as her character, a piece of paper on a tile of the wall and takes the lead. It's lead, actually. And to make an impression of that as a memory.
Right.
For her. And am I right?
It's yes, her memory. Yeah.
And when we went backstage to say hello to her and her husband and met David, she gave that to me as a gift. And she signed it. And I think she does that probably. She did that on the road. But I was so honored that she did that for me because she's been a friend for a long time.
Oh, that's a neat thing.
That's
yeah.
Great. I have 9 of them.
Yeah.
I sell them on eBay. Okay. I make them myself now.
Oh,
but
Christine.
As a matter of fact, if you can just give me yours because my copy's getting
forgive him,
tattered.
Christine. He knows not what he doeth. We want to tell the folks.
Forgive me, Michael. I don't mean
No. I just want to get these two promotional situations out. First of all, to our guests who must have had something come up in their schedule that was unbeknownst to them, Jonathan Roberts and Anna Trubinskaya, who are starring in Ballroom with a Twist at the El Portal Theater, the historic El Portal Theater in North Hollywood, and that is currently on stage. And tickets are available at 818-508-4200, and that plays through Sunday, February 13th. And then back to David, the opportunity to get to see David this week on February 2nd, Wednesday evening, 9 to 11 p.m., in the Sherman Brothers album, which is presented by Critchland at the Gardenia. And the Gardenia's a wonderful club in Hollywood, and you must have reservations. And that number is 323-467-7444.
And I am so sorry that we missed our guest from Ballroom with a Twist, but
yes.
It's tempered by the fact that it was delightful to spend the whole hour with you, David. It's nice to have someone on the show that if they have to wing it for an hour, they have more than enough of a career to talk about, which is wonderful.
But we're not done with him yet.
No, we gotta baptize you now. Now is when we ask all of our guests, and we have, about 3 minutes left, to share their most embarrassing, nightmarish story, blooper, whatever, that happened in performance. Doesn't necessarily have to be on stage, but I can imagine with all of your live performances there have to be some times
there are
that
so many to pick from.
Think embarrassing is always good.
Embarrassing. Well, you know, Lighten the Piazza was one of the most romantic shows, right?
Huge.
And they have these beautiful leaves that they blow through the stage to create ambiance and atmosphere, and
it's all in Italy.
In a beautiful piazza. So half the thing is it's just how romantic and gorgeous and beautiful it is, and so I make this this entrance, and I go running across the stage to talk to beautiful Clara, and it's singing this beautiful song, and I go running across, and those damn leaves land on the ground, and I catch one just the right way and went straight up in the air and down on my face.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And literally slid across the stage and into her feet.
You went face skiing.
Yeah, face skiing.
So did you have road rash? I mean, were you banged up?
You know, I think that leaf took a while to pull out of my skin.
Wow.
But other than that, it struck, I got tickled. That was the thing. I got, you know, it's sometimes you fall or whatever, and I just started laughing.
Oh, wow.
And she started laughing, and so we just had this kind of little laugh fest, and she picked me up.
But you worked it into the show.
We did somehow, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember that was an embarrassing
and
moment.
And just the people that saw it, did you speak to any audience afterwards that particular?
Yeah, they all asked the same thing. Is your face okay?
But did they say, did they know it was an error, or did they think it was just
no,
a
they knew. You could tell, because okay. When I went down, the whole audience went, oh!
So it wasn't like a well-executed pratfall.
No, you could tell.
Okay.
I was like, I hope he's all right. But
wow.
I survived, and I'm here to tell the tale.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Well, this time has come to a close, unfortunately. But, David, thank you so much for being here. What a treat to have you in studio.
It was
studio.
My pleasure, Michael. Really,
wow.
My pleasure.
Anytime. You're welcome back anytime. And we should say, Paul, that we have some lovely guests coming up next week from... to be with us here in studio, Michael Rupert, the Tony-nominated Broadway star, and Megan McGinnis from the much-anticipated production of Dangerous Beauty at the Pasadena Playhouse.
And that is next week. And the week following, we're going to have one of the directors and a great actor and performer who directed the local production of Room Service that Open Fist Theater is doing. His name is Ron Orbach, and we'll have him on the 14th.
And so joining him on the 14th will be the fabulous Davis Gaines from Phantom of the Opera. Ladies and gentlemen, holds the title for being the longest-running Phantom in Los Angeles, in that
production. The Yul Brynner of Phantom.
That's right. Wow. That's right.
David, thank you so much for joining us. And Michael, thank you for being who you are. And we will see you all next week.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley, right here on LA Talk Radio.